you have a seat, please? And as you do, I want to tell you that on days like today, we deliberately make it simple and real. And I remember when we set up the cross, and it's a rugged one, and there's a crown of thorns at the top, and it's kind of a picture, but it's if you study it, if you stare at it long enough, it becomes very real, it becomes very personal. And I remember when a friend of mine made this cross, and he told me stories about how he got this very unusual wood. It was spent too much time in the kiln, he said, and they put it in some kind of machine that, like a pressure treated, only it's not that kind of wood, and it was left there too long, and it got really messed up. And then if you see the rope that ties the crossbeam with the vertical, it's laced with a pretty good binding of rope. What you don't know is there's an affirmation that he and I and another one of us signed. And it's concealed in that cross. Maybe it's a picture of all of us that we need to attach ourselves, like the song we just sang. You know, it's the old, and I cling to that old rugged cross. I remember my father at Camp Tadmore was trying to erect a cross in an outdoor amphitheater they were creating, lovely setting there, right next to the lake, if you've been to Tadmore. And he and one of the directors with him decided they would try their best to get a proper sort of look of the cross. You didn't want the crossbeam too high or too low, and it became sort of mechanical for them. And they thought, how are we going to do this? We didn't look up. There was no internet then. You couldn't figure out how far up or down. And they came up with the idea that my dad would lay down, because it was a tall thing like he was, and about where it looked natural, he would extend his arms, and they placed the crossbeam there. And then they wept, you know, because it was a construction project, you know. It was just like this thing we're going to do. Nobody else was around. But in that moment, he's talked about that a moment many times with me over the years. And that cross is still there. But the impact of that cross is also still with us. I think back, just last Sunday was Palm Sunday. It's a beautiful day, and kids love to celebrate it, and usually there's palm branches and things like that, and we know the story well. But thanks to the prompting of one of the gospel writers, Luke, who's given to detail, he took us to this observation that you can't miss. And now that many of you are here Sunday, know about it, you won't ever read that again without stopping and considering. It's the words in chapter 19, verse 41, where it said, and all of the festivity that was going on, I mean, there's a crazed crowd celebrating. This visual in front of them meant that Messiah was here, and they knew that thanks to the prophet Zechariah. But what no one expected was something very much out of place, and that is the scene, the image. I like to think of it as a quick click, not a movie. It was just, he's coming down this path, riding on the foal of a donkey, and then it, Luke almost says, and there's this one little slot, and he wept when he looked at the city. We spent last Sunday talking about why he wept. I didn't suggest then, and I don't now, that I know exactly why. I speculated that biblically there are some good explanations. He approached a city and many people who, he says in words that came a little bit later, I came to you to bring you forgiveness and salvation, and you missed your moment. You had whatever going on in your life, but it wasn't something you broke away from to say, wait a second, this should redefine my life. And for 3 years, Jesus did all he could do, and many missed their moment of salvation with Jesus. That was probably one of the reasons he wept. Another one was that he knew a lot of these people, undoubtedly healed many of them. And who doesn't like that? Who would ever say that's not a great thing? God touched me and I'm healed. If you've had a bad disease or something hard hit your life and it gets better, you're speechless. You can't stop praising God. But Jesus, I think, wept because he saw those people that were healed and they didn't let him have the deeper miracle that he intended for them, which would have been a changed heart. Their hearts were hard, in fact, to the greatest healing that he wanted to pull off. And then I thought, too, he knew that there were lots of religious people. And if I can, there weren't churches then, but can I use that language tonight? They came to church often. They did the church thing, but they were devoid. They were devoid of a relationship with the King and Lord of the church, Jesus Christ. That's just a little review. It's nothing new from what we talked about. But tonight I want to take a second and talk about one more reason Jesus wept. And this one we don't have to even speculate about. It's there captured by two of the four gospel writers, Matthew and Mark. And I'm going to call this the biggest reason of all. Okay, so Jesus, you might think as this day was approaching, and it was actually Thursday night when Jesus spent the time with his disciples and then the evening ended in his arrest and spilt over into this day, Good Friday. But you might have guessed that maybe he wept because he knew exactly what was coming. He would be beaten badly. He would be flogged and scourged. And I had to look up those words this week because that's called cruel and unusual punishment in our country. It's appalling in every way. He, of course, did nothing to deserve that. And maybe that's the reason. And then I sat here tonight and I looked at the crown and I thought, my understanding is that it wasn't gently sat on his head. It was pressed hard. And this is just worth mentioning. That's kept in a very careful box until next year or next time we need it. And in spite of the care taken this year to remove it, the person that removed it was poked deeply with a thorn. It was an ouch moment. And it brought all this home. This became very real. But I'm not even sure, even though he knew all of those things, he knew what was coming. I think the reason that Well, Matthew and Mark call attention to it with these words. From noon until 3 PM, darkness came across the entire land. About 3 PM, Jesus cried out. There it is. He cried out. Sometimes I've read through those, past those words, and they didn't even stop. He cried out. It would be too jolting if I used the kind of tone that likely he used. But it's an anguish cry. He's on the cross, by the way. When he cried out, Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani, which is translated for us, my God, why have you forsaken me? In that moment, Jesus, the sinless Son of God, was abandoned and forsaken. You don't cry those words unless that's exactly what this moment represented. In that moment, Jesus was alone and deserted and in utter darkness. Because we're told at that moment, the darkness fell over a morning in Palestine. It went dark. We would call that an eclipse, but this was of a greater darkness likely than the one we had not long ago. A terrible darkness. And in that moment, Isaiah's words told to us 750 years before this event, clear back in those days, they were unfolding his very words. Keep the echo of Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. Keep that in your heart as you hear Isaiah's description of what was happening. Surely he took up our pain and bore our suffering. Yet we considered him punished by God, stricken by him, and afflicted. There's more. But he was pierced, hard sentence to finish, for our transgressions. He was crushed, there's that word again, for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace, what an outcome, fell on him. It fell on Jesus. And by his wounds, we are healed. And what wounds they were. Isaiah finished his words this way. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. As though he anticipates we've heard this story too much. Or we're capable, as humans, of seeing it as something that was really awful for him. But he hits with a jolt when he finishes verse 6 of Isaiah 53. We all, like sheep, have gone astray. Again, perhaps it's over-editorializing, but I've speculated that some might say, yeah, that's true. Some have. So he says, each of us has turned to our own way. It gets personal. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. That's what made Friday good for us. I want for a few minutes tonight to take a trip together. You're not going to have to leave your seat, but you do have a part in what we're going to do right now. What I'd like you to ask that you close your eyes. Everybody, we're not going to change the lights at all. There's nothing happening that's moving around in this room. It's a very, very important request that you close your eyes in order to take this trip. So if you close your eyes, I'll lead the way. For some of us, the trip will take you long ago, a ways back in time, maybe years, maybe what seems like a lifetime, but you're beginning this trip. For others, it will be fairly recent, almost current, but you're on this trip. And we begin our journey, and you notice almost immediately that it's fairly dimly lit where we seem to be walking. And there's a good reason for that, because you tend to stay away from that place. It's a place that's hard to be. And you do a lot of things to stay away from it. Even now, going there may leave you with a chill or worse, almost a sense of panic that can set in. By now, you know where this trip's going. It's a time and a place you would pay any money to wash from your memory. But it's real and it's true and it's permanently etched in you. It's all too familiar that you're nearing that darkest, most cursed moment in your memory. If you're really there, even slightly, you're starting to feel something in your throat, maybe in your chest. It's like, are we really there? Are we really going there? And almost in that moment, your eyes can see enough to know that it looks really bad. And in fact, smells bad, because it is bad. In the worst sense of the word. And unless I miss my guess, everything about that time, and even this time where you're being asked to revisit that scene, makes you want to run far from it, not remain in it. To flee forever from any trace of that regrettable time. Don't open your eyes and don't retreat. Because just about then you hear something. And it's the sound of footsteps, but somebody's running. It startles you at first because that place is inherently private. You would never take anybody there with you. Who belongs to those footsteps? You wonder to yourself. Because it's a place you are all alone. But you stop for one scary moment, almost frozen, because you hear someone call out your name. And then these words, "It's me, Jesus." When you wanted to run away and hide, I ran to you to tell you that in that awful place, that treacherous, terrible place, It was in that place I suffered for you, and I took your place. Yes, on that darkest day, your darkest day, I stepped in and suffered for you to save you. And because I love you, even while you were totally lost and broken and dirty and alone, I gave my life for yours. You and I know these words well. And we should embrace them because they're true. Reports the apostle. When you were utterly helpless, Christ came at just the right time and died for us sinners. Now, most people, well, they might be willing to die for an upright person. Though someone might perhaps be willing to die for a really good person. But God showed his great love for us by sending Christ to die for us while we were still sinners. In the place you just visited. Not your shining moment at all. It's that moment you wince at what happened there. And since we've been made right in God's sight by the blood of his son Jesus, he will certainly save us from God's condemnation of what that moment was all about. For since our friendship with God was restored by the death of his son, while we were still his enemies, we will certainly be saved through the life of his son. And oh, Jesus, we love you for what you did to rescue wretched people, broken people, lost and dirty people, by sending your precious, pure, holy Son to a cross, spilling your blood to cover and clean us completely. I'm not sure how to thank you. Sometimes it feels like tears, sometimes it feels like jumping up and down wildly with excitement. I'm free. I'm alive. I'm forgiven. But it's all because of you. And we love you, Lord. You can open your eyes now. The words that I just read from Romans 5 inspired the song we're about to present to you. It's called Oh the Blood. And it's full of powerful moments, sounds, and words. These words, listen for them, but experience them, and take them to wherever you are on that path since he met you, a sinner, and forgave you and made you one of his own children. Shameless sin, the song begins, placed on him. Savior Son, Holy One, slain so I can live. Oh, the love, no greater love. Grace, how can it be that in my sin, yes, even then, where we just came from, he shed his blood for me. What a sacrifice that saved my life. His blood became my victory. I hope it will stay with you to personalize all of this and say, Jesus, what a sacrifice you made to save the likes of me. Let's participate in this song now.